Welcome to Introduction to Missiology. We are in Lesson 8, Exercise for Ministry. This is the fourth step in missions. Sometimes it's the most difficult yet rewarding step, and it is to how we are going to prepare young men for ministry. Like I said at the beginning of Lesson 7, a lot of this can be applied as well as in the ministry that women do and teaching ladies. But we are specifically talking about exhorting men to ministry the way Jesus called his disciples, the way Paul brought Timothy with him, and then how he and they began to prepare these men for ministry. The reason that we chose the word exercise to train a man has maybe two synonyms, educate or exercise. So you could do physical training and it's exercise. So an athlete exercises. To do this, he has to stretch his mind, his body, his heart, his soul. Every part of him is involved in his training. So a man in ministry is more like an athlete. And the missionary is a lot like a coach. And so when we're talking about exercising, we're going to stretch him. We're going to put him through some situations. And not only mentally, but also spiritually. You might say interrelationally, and he's just going to grow and he's going to be exercised. So what we're talking about when a man surrenders to ministry, or at least he begins to train for ministry, I have this word surrender in my vocabulary from the American churches, but we don't find in the word a lot of times where it says, and Timothy surrendered to ministry. It just says he went along with Paul. It didn't say there is a point where the disciples left their nets and followed Christ. So that is, in a sense, surrendering that. But we're going to talk about some three things today. We're going to talk about how a missionary is like a coach and how he prepares his players for the game. Then we're going to talk about what are the key areas for development. You know, is this just mental? Is it just spiritual? Or what is it? Then we're going to talk about the steps for developing a plan for growth to fatherhood. So before we get into that, let's look at some of the options of how we get men into ministry. There's a few models you'll see out there in different circles of churches. The first one is the charismatic gifts of the Spirit model. The charismatic gifts of the Spirit model might put a person into ministry in 3 months to 12 months because that person is charismatic, because they might have any of these gifts that that person sees as being very whimsical, or I guess for a better word for it, is charismatic. In South America, where I've served before, the charismatics would go into a new town and they would begin to evangelize. They would hold 3 months of evangelistic services and they would leave some people in charge after they left after 3 months. So they would leave a church and a pastor after 3 months of ministry because that person had the Spirit. And so their idea was, Spirit's filling this person, they leave them. And they do that all over, which means they multiply a whole lot more leaders than the Baptists do. But there's a whole lot more sin problems, there's a whole lot, that's just not biblical. And for all the reasons that it brings a lot of shame to the name of Christ. So that moves really fast. Then there's the seminary model. The seminary model moves really slow. That means a person's got to go to their Bible college for 4 years, and they've got to get probably an MDiv degree for another 2 or 3 years. And then they're ready maybe to start ministry. So before a person's ever even in ministry at all, you know, they've got 4, 6, 7 years of formal education. Now that's another extreme. It's really slow. And then there's the missionary retirement model, and that's the slowest. The missionary retirement model is, you can get in ministry when I die or retire. And so they're going to start and build a church, and sometimes they even build large churches. But they are not going to let anybody else be the pastor or preacher. The closest they'll get is they might say, this is my assistant. Or this guy is administrating it while I'm gone. But they don't lift anybody else up to the point of leadership. And so sometimes it can take 10 years till that missionary leaves the field and finally leaves somebody else in charge, or 50 years. And you might also call this the sit and wait model, which is, you've seen churches where the whole front row is full of young men who want to be preachers, and sometimes they even call them preacher boys, and they're just waiting for the pastor to die so that one of them can be pastor. And when the other 9 don't get to be pastor, they'll probably leave the church. But that's the sit and wait model. That's very similar to the missionary retirement model. That's the longest model. I believe, however, there's a different pattern. We're going to call this the New Testament pattern. The others, we called them a model, but this one we're calling a pattern because of the lesson, the reasons that we said in last week's lesson, is that there is a pattern throughout the New Testament of these and their examples. The two main patterns, again, that we're going to look at are Jesus and Paul, because we have the most recorded about them. I can't say exactly how Peter and John and some of the other disciples did it, because we don't see a lot of their work recorded. But we know how Paul did it, and we have four accounts of how Jesus did it. So we're going to look at that as a pattern more than a model. So the first question that I want to answer tonight is, how is a missionary like a coach? Because the lesson is called Exercising Men for Ministry. And here I'm just going to give you a number of ways that a missionary is like a coach. The first way is that he must teach people to work together. Any coach understands that it is essential that his team learns to play together. And so in ministry, when we train men, we don't train one man. Jesus trained 12. He trained 12 because it's so important that men work together. Paul, he always worked with a missionary team. You never saw Paul with just one guy. If he had Timothy, he also had Titus. If he was with Barnabas, he was also with John Mark and Luke. He was always with a team, and he had to coach them, teaching them how to work together. Second, a coach must motivate his players to want to win. Now, there ought to be a want in everybody. But the coach has to cultivate and motivate that desire for the team to want to win. So what I mean by that is a pastor and a trainer of other pastors and preachers has to motivate the men that he is training to desire the work of the ministry and to love it and to want to give more of themselves to it. So thirdly, a coach must guide his players in how to win. And that's what a pastor is going to do as he trains young men for ministry. He's going to teach them how to do the ministry in a way that sees people saved and discipled and trained and more churches started. A coach must show his players how to do it. Meaning, I remember playing sports that my coach would get on the field and he'd show us how to kick. Soccer. This was soccer. And he shows how to do all the things that we need to do. Now, he had been a player, but he was no longer a player, but he could still show us how to do it. Fifth thing, a coach must let his players play. Now, there's a such thing as a player coach, and this is what you're going to be a lot of times when you first get to the field more. But in the end, a coach has to let his players fail or succeed on the field based on what he has taught them. And eventually, as missionaries, we are going to leave, and the men that we train must either fall or stand. And I have to see myself going into it as a coach, not as a player. Though I need to play sometimes, I am primarily a coach. So I must know every facet of the game. I'm going to recruit, motivate, train, put a team together. Really, I want to teach them to be coaches too in the end. I want to train players, but in the end, I want them to be just like me and learn to coach others and to start more teams and to train more players. So when you think of yourself as a missionary in missions, think of yourself less like a player and more like a coach. Now, don't go to the extreme where you don't play. So I know some missionaries who they say, I don't witness, that's what I teach everybody else to do. Or I don't preach, that's what I teach everybody else to do. But you cannot train people to preach without preaching. You can't train people to witness without witnessing. So don't take that too far to think that you're not going to be a player, but you ought to see yourself more as a coach than you do as a player on the field. Most missionaries go to the field and they see themselves as the great soul winner and the great church builder. But that ought not be the way they do. They ought to win souls and plant churches, but really they ought to see themselves as a trainer of men who are going to win souls, disciple them, and plant churches. If I was going to be just a soul winner and church planner, I'd stay here and do it. But I'm going there to make them a success, to teach them how to play the game. So what are the key areas for development? We're talking, you can see this graphic in the lesson, helping them grow. We talked when we talk about establishing believers, we talked about them growing from little children to being young men. And so in this lesson, we're talking about helping established believers now learn to be fathers, or basically to learn to be spiritual fathers, to learn to grow others in the faith. You can find this in 1 John 2:12-14. You can look back to lesson 6, where we talked about establishing believers, and we picked apart those verses more in 1 John. Today, we're not going to look so much at those verses, but just take the general outline that people grow from little children in the faith to young men, and finally, to fathers. So what are the goals of spiritual growth? This is what we're going to cover about what they need. Here, I'm going to give you three basic areas. We talked about this question is, what are the key areas for development in these new men that we've exhorted for ministry? So basically, we've come to the stage now, the person has accepted Christ, they've become faithful, and now we have some understanding between the two of us that they are being trained to serve. Now, I'm not that. This may be a person who's going to be a Sunday school teacher, or maybe a person who's going to be a pastor or a church planter, evangelist, in all of these areas. I'm not going to promise somebody what they're going to be, or even try to lay out their future for them. I'm just going to begin to train them to do ministry, and ideally to do full-time ministry. So, what are the key areas I want to focus on? When they were a new believer, I focused on three areas. Them getting in the Word, getting in church, and getting sin out of their life. Those are the three big areas. But now that they've grown past that, that was kind of like milk for them. Now they're going to eat meat, and here's the three areas that now I'm going to focus on with these young men who want to learn to be fathers. Three things. First, theology. Second, practice. And third, character. So, theology, I'm going to teach them leadership in the body of Christ by learning how to correctly and effectively handle the Word of God. A person needs to know the Word, love it, understand it from Genesis to Revelation, how to understand it in context and teach it and preach it. Because all that being a father is comes from this Word. All that teaching and helping others grow is going to be in their ability to take the Bible and use it to grow a church. Now, many people grow churches without the Bible. So don't think you can't. You could give away toys and hamburgers and get hundreds of people to come. Hundreds of kids on school church buses. You could put on a good show with lights and sound and good music and get people to come. You could tell people a lot of things that would help their families, and they would enjoy coming and they would listen to you because they need help with their families. So you don't necessarily need the Bible to grow a crowd, but the young men that are training for ministry must know how to use the Bible to grow a real church. It's different than just getting a crowd. A crowd's not going to last. A church is going to multiply and grow and last. So I want to teach them the Word. This is typically where a Bible college will focus, only on teaching the Word. A lot of times they don't even do a good job at that. But this is the one area where they try to focus on. I was with a friend who was going through the curriculum of a Bible college in the U.S. a few years ago, and he pointed out that about 50% of the courses that Bible college was teaching, the pastoral majors, were focused on teaching or focused on understanding the Bible. That was a problem because that's got to be a huge deal. So we want to teach them the Word inside and out. They need to memorize it, know it, understand it, be able to teach it to others. But that's not where we stop. And this is important in training men for ministry. Second is practice. We're going to establish the lifelong habit of intentional evangelism with new people and the subsequent skill of discipling his new little children in the faith. So here's where the practice needs to really focus on evangelism and making disciples. So here's what I want to help this young man do to help him be a father. Win some people to Jesus and disciple them. Pretty simple, right? But if he doesn't do that, then he can't claim he's a father, even if he's finished with his training. He can claim that he knows a lot about being a father, and he's learned a lot of the Word, which a father needs to know to help grow his new children. But if he has no children, if he's won nobody to Christ and he's never discipled anybody, then he's still not a father. But I want to help him learn to be a father in those 3 to 4, 5 years that I'm spending a lot of time with him. Third is character. This is the development of the inner man. Psalm 15 is one that a mentor of mine taught me to focus on. I would like to ask you to read that later, but it's basically a psalm that focuses on the inner character of the man of God. This is the perfect example of this was Jesus Christ. So in his character, I want this young man to learn skills of relationships, of leading those who are under his care well, like his wife, his children, and new believers. I want him working with his peers by leading by example. And I want him to learn to submit to the authorities that the Lord has put over him in the church and in the government and in other ways. And if he's not 18 yet, I want him to learn to submit to his parents. And so working within these authority structures of the world, church, government, and home, I want the character of this young man to be developed, that he can lead others and also be humble enough to follow. And these are the three areas: theology, practice, and character. And we've written some courses on all of those things that we teach the men that we train. So, what are the action steps for the discipler? What are you, as the missionary, going to do to help this young man grow in the areas of theology, practice, and character? Here's what they are, and they all start with the word time. Okay, this is different than the first step. In the first step where we're establishing the believer, the Bible was one tool, the church was one tool, and time was a third tool that we spent with them to help them work through these sins that they were dealing with in their life. But now a person has been established in their faith, and I am beginning to train them for ministry, I'm going to triple the amount of time I'm spending with them. I'm not going to spend a ton of time with a new believer as far as 40 or 50 hours a week. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to see him at church on Sunday and Wednesday. I might try to get together with him 2 times a week to study the Word, at most, probably. But he's going to have a job, and I'm going to be busy, and I'm going to meet with him. You know, a total of maybe I'm going to see him 5, 6, 7 hours a week maximum. But now with this young man I'm training for ministry, I'm going to triple that amount of time. And I'm going to spend 20, 30, 40 or more hours a week with him, teaching him theology, practice, and character. And here's how I'm going to do it. The time I'm going to spend with him is going to be divided in 3 ways. First of all, I'm going to spend time teaching him. That's how I'm going to get theology into him. I'm going to have him reading books, and we're going to be teaching through those books. We're going to organize classes that he's going to learn through a curriculum, and I'm just going to instruct him. And this time I spend is going to be time spent teaching. And secondly, time spent serving. And this is how he's going to get the practice in. So that means we're going to go out talking to people about Jesus together, evangelizing. If I'm discipling somebody, I'm going to bring, you know, a new believer, I want to bring him along so he can learn, see how a father treats a young baby in Christ. I'm going to teach him how I prepare sermons, and he's going to see how I handle the Word. And so this is time serving together. If I'm organizing some ministry in the church, I want him to be with me to watch how I work with people. And I'm going to take him to a home small group Bible study with me that I'm leading, or a new church plant. And I'm just going to spend a lot of time with him. So the third thing I'm going to do when I spend time with him is I'm going to spend time listening. Now, this is a big deal because most pastors don't listen very much. They talk a lot, because they're so used to talking and they're preaching all the time that they aren't used to listening. And they have learned that if you listen to people, they just whine and whine and whine and waste your time. But these young men training for ministry shouldn't be those kind of people. These young men training for ministry, we need to listen to. Not like the guy that we're taking, doing counseling with, and we've been counseling with him for 20 years, and if you would let him, he'd take 5 hours of your week. We're not talking about that guy. We're talking about time listening to believers who are now established in ministry and that I am beginning to train for ministry. I'm going to spend time listening to them. That means I'm going to ask a lot of questions. I want to let him express what he thinks about things. I want to get to know his thought process. And then I want to speak to it. I want to say, no, that's a wrong way to think. But at first, I want to listen to him. I want to know, does he love his wife and his kids well? Does he struggle with where his eyes are wandering and looking and lusting after other women? I want to see, does he think about himself a lot or does he think about others? How can you tell if a man thinks a lot about himself? Listen to him talk. And if he's always talking about himself, you can know what kind of character issue he has. Could be a very selfish person. And you need to address that. I was with one young man who I was training for ministry last year, and we spent a year and a half together, and we were together many, many hours a week. And he would be very quiet when we were not talking about him. And I would ask him, what are you thinking about? And he would say, oh, I'm just thinking about how I'm not doing a good job at this or that. And he would always talk about himself. And it wasn't in the way he was building himself up. He wasn't saying, I was thinking how awesome I am. He was kind of thinking about, he was down on himself all the time, which is just another form of selfishness. So I had to root that out of him. I had to say, man, why are you always thinking about yourself? Why don't you think there's two other people around you? At that time, there were three of us together. I said, why don't you think of these two other people that are with you and think how you can encourage them? Have a good attitude. Have an excited attitude. Because he's never going to be a leader if he's always down on himself, thinking about himself. But he will be a leader if I can teach him to get his mind off of himself, start thinking about others, start thinking about how his attitude is affecting others, how he can excite and encourage others. But to do that, I have to listen. And I've made a lot of mistakes at that. I've spent a lot of time talking and less listening when I needed to learn to listen more. I've had young men that I've been training for ministry come to me and say, you know, I haven't told you some things I've been thinking because you haven't listened to me much. You've just been giving me lessons. And sometimes they were wrong and sometimes they were right. Sometimes they were just being selfish, and other times, though, it was true. I was just talking so much that I didn't have time to listen to them, and I didn't know what they were dealing with. So spend time teaching, spend time serving with them, and spend time listening to them. I try to make it a habit to get to know the person that I'm teaching in a deep way. I want to know his family. I want to know what his childhood was like growing up. I want to know what his relationship with his dad was like. That's going to be extremely important in his leadership and in his attitude. I want to know what kind of things the Lord is showing him in the Word. So spend a lot of time listening. So here are some completion questions. Here's how you know if you're done with these stages. If you have taught a young man sufficiently in theology, practice, and character for him to be exported, and that's the next lesson of next week, is exporting national pastors. So how do I know that the guy is not a young man anymore, like a teenager, but he's now a dad, and he's ready for me to let him go and to export him into ministry by himself? Here's three things in each one of these three categories. Does the young man know how to effectively teach and lead others in biblical ministry? I want to know, can he preach? Can he teach? Can he put together Sunday school lessons by himself? Can he open the Word in any genre of Scripture, take a paragraph, understand its meaning, and apply it to the lives of the people? And have I seen him utilize that in a way that's actually helped people? So that's the way I understand if he is ready theologically. If he is ready practically, here's my question. Does the young man effectively seek out new relationships, share the gospel, and train new believers in their three spiritual growth goals that we talked about in lesson 6. With how many people has he done this? If he's done it with one, it's possible he's ready to be a pastor. Possible. If he's done it with 10, definitely. The guy's ready to start pastoring. Now, it may be a Sunday school that he's leading. It may be that he is going to pastor this church and I'm going to leave it. Or maybe I'm going to send him to start another church. But if he has learned to disciple people and he has people that he's led to Christ that he's discipling, then he's a father. In practice, he's a father. The third area is the third question to see if he's done with his developing a character. And you're never done with any of this stuff. But I mean, if you're mature enough to be exported is this. Does the young man harbor unity, peace, and spiritual growth in all of his personal relationships? Or are there sparks flying in multiple directions in his relationships? You know, I don't want a guy to, I don't want to send a guy to start a church who is just constantly fighting with people, who can't get along with people, or who I've seen some major character issues in his life, or where I haven't seen him to have strong friendships because he's so self-centered. You know, I want to see that a guy has good, stable, edifying relationships with others. And that's going to tell a lot about his character. So that's kind of the answer to the question, our second question we're answering tonight. What are the key areas for development? So they are this. We'll repeat them one last time. The key areas for development are theology, practice, and character. I want a guy to mature in those three areas. So, last question. What are the steps for developing a training plan for making disciples? This is a big question, but it's an important one. What are the steps for developing a training plan for making disciples? Step number one, identify goals and expectations. So here's the questions you're going to answer in this first step. What are our core values? Now I can tell you the answers to all these questions because I worked through them myself in North Africa where we have developed a training program for the men there. But I think everybody, when they go, they need to answer these questions for themselves. So what are your core values? What are the things that if you train a man, you want him to believe in as strongly as you? And don't name 30 things. Keep it 10 or less. We wrote 5. I'm not going to tell you what they are. I want you to write your own. But what are your core values? Can you describe the ideal graduate? And again, I don't necessarily like the Bible college, though it's sometimes necessary and helpful. I'm not talking about starting a Bible college, but a graduate from your training, basically. And by graduate, I don't mean somebody you don't care about anymore after they finish. I just mean in this training that you're putting them through, when they get out on the other side, what are they going to look like? Another question under this first step is, what are the marks of maturity? How can you know that they're ready? Another question is, what is the mission statement that best communicates our goal? So after you answer that question, you'll know where you're going. You'll know what your goals and your expectations are for these guys that you're saying to them, come follow me. So step two, after you know what your goals are, what you want the men to look like, what you want them to, the core values is that you want them to have, and what your mission statement is, you want to catalog the knowledge base, mindset, and skill set. So how are you going to do that? You're going to answer the following questions. What is the time frame for training? How long are you going to be able to spend with these guys? And it's going to be different. Paul spent 2 years in Ephesus, and you don't always know how long you're going to be somewhere. But maybe if you're in a restricted access country and you think you might get 2 years or 1 year, if you only get that much time with them, how long will you have to get them from point A to point B? Ideally, you'll have more than 1 year. You have 2, 3, 4 years to spend training a guy. So what will the disciple do on a regular basis is the second question. And then what will the disciple know by the end of the training? Notice I didn't just say no, also do. What will the disciple be able to do on a regular basis, and what will he know? Will he read his Bible every day? Will this graduate instinctively share Christ with people? Will he be habitually involved in discipling new believers? Will he be able to prepare 3 lessons a week or 2 or 1? What will he be able to do, and what will he know? Will he know about all the facets of salvation, of sanctification? Will he know what the book of Malachi is all about? You know, what are the things he's going to need to know, and what is he going to be able to do? Now, we've come to step two. We've understood what our goals are and our expectations, and now we have determined what the disciple will be able to do and know and how long we have to get him there. Step three, we want to determine the courses, texts, teachers, and activities that are going to go into accomplishing step two. So what here's the questions that'll break down that step for you. What courses will be necessary to accomplish step two in order to produce our desired disciple? What texts will be necessary, talking about books, to support these courses? What teachers are available who model our goal for the disciples to follow? I don't want to be the only teacher. I want them to have other men who are discipling and training them, if possible. Now, I may be the only one at the beginning, but as soon as possible, I want to involve men who have gone through this training to help me and to teach and train with me. So I want to identify who the other teachers are going to be along with me and other fathers in the faith for these guys. What activities, the last question for this step is, what activities could give application and practice for the skill set from stage two? Activities like weekly discipleship meetings, like preaching opportunities and teaching opportunities, like organizing a small group Bible study, like growing a Sunday school. What are the activities I'm going to put, like a missions trip once a year? All kinds of activities we can think of that can help us accomplish the skill set we want this young man to have when he graduates. So step four now is we're going to determine the scope, sequence, and schedule of this training. Meaning, so here's the questions that are going to help break that down. In what order will the necessary courses be studied? So I've already determined in step three what I'm going to teach them, what are the titles of the course and the big ideas of the course. But now I'm going to determine what is the order they need to go in. What will the schedule for the coursework be? Are they going to learn in the evenings because they have day jobs? Or am I going to be able to take them with me 24/7? And am I going to teach them classes in the morning, have them doing activities in the afternoon in ministry? Or what is the scope and schedule of this training going to look like? Not all schedules are created equal. If I'm only going to spend one night a week with these guys, how many hours does that give me with them in a year? Let's say I spend two nights a week. That only gives me 104 hours a year. Jesus did that with his disciples probably in a week or 2 weeks at the least, because he was with them night and day. He was with them 16 hours a day, all their waking hours. And so if I'm going to create a plan that's got a schedule that only allows for 2 hours a week, that's going to make my training time take much longer. So I want to figure out in this schedule how I can maximize their practice, theology, and character growth. The time I'm going to spend with them, like I already said, I'm going to spend time teaching them, ministering with them, and listening to them, just spending time with them. So how much time am I going to be able to do that? What's my schedule and their schedule going to look like through which I teach them these courses? It's an extremely important question. another question here under number four is what will the schedule for the activities be? Meaning if they're going on missions trips in the summer, if I'm training missionaries from the U.S., that's the same thing. Are they going to do that 2 weeks a year or 6 weeks a year? If we're in North Africa, I also want to take trips. How long are those trips going to last? Where are they going to be? When are they going to be? I want to determine all that in step number four when I determine the scope, sequence, and schedule. Step number five is implementation. What will the budget be to make this happen? What communication tools will keep everyone focused and progressing? And what are the different areas of responsibility for the implementation of the program? And I want to spread out the responsibilities. I don't want to be the only guy who's involved in this. I want to involve other people in training more men for ministry. And implementation is a lot of time where everything gets held up. Step six and last, make periodic evaluations and adjustments. So when we do this, we're going to determine from the very beginning at what time period are we going to evaluate this and see how this training is going. Typically, something like 6 months, every 3 to 6 months, you want to look back and see how it's going and compare your original notes with how you're doing. And then you want to develop a list of questions to evaluate your process and your progress. And then you're going to determine what needs to change to keep us true to our original vision. Do we need to change the schedule? Do we need to change the courses? Do we need to change the teachers? Do we need to get different students or more students? Or how are we going to do this? And this is a six-step process. I ran through it really fast. I've got the notes here that you're going to take home with you that I would love for you to sit down in whatever ministry you're involved in and think about, how am I going to take the people from where they are to where I want them to be? Where do you want them to be is the first step. And then you're going to figure out what they need to know and do. And then you're going to figure out what you're going to teach them so that they can know and do this. And then you're going to determine how long of a period you're going to take to do that and what schedule you're going to do it in. And then how you're going to implement that. And a lot of ministry happens just on the whim. And people don't know what they're even doing or why they're doing it or how they're doing it. A lot of people go into ministry and they say, I want to plant churches and train men. I say, well, what's your plan? They don't have a plan. I could give you a plan and we could stamp it into everybody's plan, but you're not going to feel that. It may not even work with your culture and the schedule and all these things. And even Paul recognized that you start with different crowds. He talked about the Cretans to Titus, and he said even their own poets say they're all liars, and he talked about some other character problems they have. So that might affect the courses you teach them. I serve in North Africa where we work with Muslims, and one of the courses we teach is on persecution, because at the very beginning they need to know how to handle persecution. All of this will depend, but it's basically, it has to be biblical, and it should look basically the same. But I want you to take those steps home in a ministry you're already working in, whether you're teaching in a Sunday school, or you've got a bus route, or you're discipling just one guy, or maybe you want to do it for your future ministry and think about what's this going to look like when I arrive at this place. And answer all these questions. We did this a number of years ago, and it took us 2 full days of sitting in a room talking through this after we'd already started 2 churches, because we realized we don't have a plan for how to make disciples. We want to make disciples, but we don't know how to do it. And we determined we wanted men who would leave their secular employment and serve Christ. So we made a schedule and coursework that would require that of them. And so we determined before we got there where we were going. The problem with missions in general is that it's kind of like Charlie Brown, who threw a dart at a wall and then went to the dart and he painted a black bullseye around the dart. And Linus came up to him and said, what are you doing? And he said, I'm hitting the bullseye every time this way. And that's what missionaries do. They just go there, they say, I'm going to evangelize, establish churches, and train leaders. And about the time they're done, whether it's 4 years, 8 years, 12 years, or 30, they're going to look back and say, I did just what I wanted to do. No matter what it was that they did. They'll say, I did what I was planning on doing. And the truth is, a lot of times they didn't have a plan at all. And so they say, I hit it because everything they did, they just painted a black circle around. But let's do it in a different way. Let us make a plan all along the way and keep evaluating it of how we're going to train and exercise men for ministry. Because we don't just want to talk about it, we want to actually accomplish it. And I was Don helped me think of this illustration earlier, because we were talking about it's like the Lego set putting it together. And he helped me understand that really it's a lot like baseball. Because you can get to first base, which is evangelism, and second base, which is gathering a church together and establishing some believers. And third base, where you exhort people to ministry and there's people excited about ministry. But you really don't get a home run. You don't get a run to home base until you've trained some men for ministry. So these steps and this idea of these 3 areas, theology, practice, and character, will help you get a run. And a run looks like this: a goal, a win. Looks like this. One young or old, doesn't matter, man pastoring, leading a local church and multiplying himself and more young men in that church. That is the goal of a missionary. If he can do that one time, he's a success. If he can multiply that by training men to train men the way he has trained them, he can be an unlimited success by starting tens and hundreds of churches, and in eternity or in the next number of generations after him, after he is dead and gone, it can be thousands. And so it all starts, though, with this purposeful making of disciples.